Psalm 139 says, O Lord, you have searched me and you know me. You know when I sit and when I rise. You perceive my thoughts from afar. You discern my going out and my lying down. You are familiar with all my ways. Before a word is on my tongue, you know it completely, O Lord. You hem me in behind and before. You have laid your hand upon me. Such knowledge is too wonderful for me, too lofty for me to attain. Where can I go from your spirit? Where can I flee from your presence? If I go up to the heavens, you are there. If I make my bed in the depths, you are there. If I rise on the wings of the dawn, if I settle on the far side of the sea, even there your hand will guide me. Your right hand will hold me fast. If I say, surely the darkness will hide me and the light become night around me, even the darkness will not be dark to you. The night will shine like the day, for darkness is as light to you. For you created my inmost being. You knit me together in my mother's womb. I praise you because I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Your works are wonderful. I know that full well. Come on ahead, Brian. It's great to have you along here at Hamilton Road. And
Thank you very much, Keith. And it's good to be with you, and it's great to see so many out tonight. We're hoping that we've got these three areas here filled, but it's great to see folks here over to my right and your left. And thank you so much for inviting us here tonight to be with you. And tonight I'm going to try my very best just to keep it down to 45 minutes. Normally when I share in an evening service, I can go on for an hour and 20 minutes. So I'll try my best. I'll try and give you a good taster of God's faithfulness and His goodness over the last 53 years. And tonight, folks, as already mentioned, I'm going to take you back 53 years ago, back to 1961. Because in that year, my mum was suffering with morning sickness. And she was expecting her third child, myself. And my mum was not to know that as a result that the doctor had given her two tablets called thalidomide. That 8.5 months later, that I would be born with no arms. And you know, it was so different as a third child. Because when my big brother Alan was born, the midwife said to my mum, Mrs. Galtz, you've got a boy. And you know, when my sister Patricia was born, you've got a girl. But you know, when I came out of the womb there in the Jubilee Hospital in Belfast, do you know, the midwife, she said nothing. There was a hush. There was a silence. And you know, I was wrapped up in the wee blankets, and I was taken away from my mum for several hours. And you know, my mum's first fear was that I was dead. And you know, here tonight, folks, I nearly killed my mum. Because as I came out of the womb, my shoulders, they ripped the inside of my mum. And my mum, she lost several pints of blood. We're talking about 53 years ago, 1961. And for a short time, it was touch and go whether my mum would survive. Thankfully, they replaced the blood that she had lost. She stayed in the hospital for about 10 days. And when she was strong enough, she went back home to Ballyclare, where we had a wee small holding, a wee pig farm. But you know, I stayed in the hospital for another 10 days. And they were putting all these wires into my legs and the rest of my body to see if I had any internal injuries, as well as having no arms. And my mum would say to me in later years, she said, Brian, I used to come up as often as I could from Ballyclare to see you there in the Jubilee Hospital there in Belfast. And you know, one particular day when my mum came up to see me in the hospital, One of the nurses said to my mum, "Mrs. Galt, you've got a terrible wane." Do we all know what a wane is here tonight in Bangor? A wee one. They said, "Your Brian will not stop crying from 6 o'clock in the morning to 10 o'clock at night. We know he's got a good pair of lungs." And you know, my mum just could not understand. Why was I crying so much? So my mum, she looked at me in the wee cot from head to toe. And then she found the problem. Do you know what the problem was, everybody? My bottom. My bottom was as red as flesh. It was raw. And my mum was furious. And you know, when the next nurse came by, my mum said, "Nurse, come over here." And you know, when my mum showed the nurse my bottom, she said, "Nurse, if you had a bottom as red as my brands, you'd be screaming the first thing in the morning, the last thing at night." So my mum said, "Right, I'm taking my brand home." And you know, she said, she wrapped me up in a wee blanket. And she stormed, marched out of the hospital. And she got onto the 153 bus for Ballyclare. I didn't know them, but I found out later years. And you know, when we got home to the farm, my mum opened up the medicine cabinet. She got out the zinc and the Vaseline. And for the next week, she lashed that ointment onto my wee bottom. Wasn't that good? Well, I thought it was. Do you know, for the first time, my mum saw that I had a smile. Yes, friends, tonight, I cried when I needed my nappy changed, or was hungry, or wanted attention. But why I begin tonight here in Hamilton Road with that story is because of the bonding, the acceptance between my mum and myself. You see, my mum had a nervous breakdown, as you can imagine. It was such a shock when her third child of four was born with no arms. But you know, I am one of 506 children that were born in the UK because of the drug thalidomide. Around the world, nearly 10,000 babies were born. 2,800 in Germany alone, because that's where the drug was invented. But you know, for my mum, when she saw me in that wee cot and saw that wee smile on my face, she said, "Bran, I couldn't help but love you." You see, for some mums, I only find this in later years, that for some of the mums, especially if it was their first child, often they would have the child adopted or put into an institution. And you know, tonight I'm so thankful that my mum and dad took neither of those options. They loved me to the best of their ability. And yet, you know, Keith, way back 53 years ago, attitudes to disability were so different than they are today. Do you know, way back in 1961, if you were born without arms or other disabilities, you had been kept indoors, shunned away. And you know, my mum felt safe when she went out to feed the animals on the farm. They never talked back. They never asked any awkward questions. But you know, if any patter or feet of neighbours came up the lane, my mum's natural instinct would be to pick me up, pick me into the house before anybody would see me. And yet one day, one of the neighbours, a lady called Lily Bell, come up the lane, up to the house. And you know, when she saw me for the first time, in those days I used to have lots of curly blonde hair. And the first time she saw me, she said to my mum, "Isabel, is that Brian?" And she said, "Isn't he cute? Isn't he lovely?" And I still am. Well, that's my story. And you know, from my mum, friends, tonight, for my mum to hear those words. You see, my mum thought that everybody would come round, would come and say not nice things. But you know, Lily Bell was that friend that my mum needed in the weeks and months after I was born. And I'm sure there were times my mum needed a shoulder to cry on. And you know, Lily Bell was there. I'm sure that's the same here in Hamilton Road Baptist Church. There, you know the Lily Bells in this church, those who are good listeners and ones who you can go to and have a good natter and are great support to you. Well, do you know Lily Bell was there for my mum in those early days? And yet, you know, my mum was given good advice. You see, my mum could have done everything for me, all matured, all the tasks, right through my childhood years. But my mum was encouraged that you'd have to stand back and to watch me doing things with these here, my toes. I say today to people, the only time these are my feet are when I walk. The rest of the time, these are my hands. And you know, from a very early age, my mum was encouraging my dad to put a spoon in between my toes when I was feeding myself. And you know, friends, tonight it wasn't natural to lift your wee leg up onto the kitchen table. And you know, my legs weren't as long then as they are today. And you know, I used to get these awful cramps and pains in my legs. I used to say, "Mommy, Daddy, why do I have to lift my wee leg up onto the table?" And you know, I used to look at the animals on the farm. And you know, they had no arms. And they had no difficulty feeding themselves. And you know, as a wee boy, I thought to myself, if it's good enough for the animals, it's good enough for Brian. And you know, friends, I used to stick my wee head down into the plates. And you know, with my tongue, I used to lick up all the food so fast. And my brother and sister, you say, "That's not fair. How Brian can slurp up the food with his tongue." But you know, if any neighbors came around, friends, tonight, you know, Mum and Dad would look over to me, and I knew what I had to do. I had to get my wee leg up onto it. But you know, there used to be time, well, there was a certain time of the year, we used to have a field of cabbages. And you know, every day cabbage seemed to be on the menu. I think, did we have cabbage today, Darren? And I do like it. But you know, back then, after you've had it for 20 days in a row, you know, I remember sometimes I'd be sitting down at the kitchen table, friends. And you know, I'd get that cabbage into the fork. And as I was bringing it up to my mouth, I'd come so far and then I'd let it go past my mouth. And it would go onto the floor. And you know, Laddie the dog, he would come to my rescue. But you know, my father would catch on and said, "Brian, if you're going to be a big, strong boy, you have to eat your greens." I'm going to have to cut a few stories out there because we better move on to me the first time I went to Scotland. We'll just move forward. There we are. And do you know what the age? That's me when I was 2 and 3 months old. And you know, when I was 2 and 3 months old, I was told I was going to get arms. I don't know if you remember when you were 2 and a bit years of age. But you know, I was told I was going to Scotland, to Edinburgh, to the Princess Margaret Rose Hospital. And you know, Mum and Dad took me there. And you know, I was only there a couple of hours when Mum and Dad said goodbye. Goodbye. And you know, I wouldn't see my Mum and Dad again for the next 10 weeks. 10 weeks. And as you can imagine, as a wee boy of 2 and a bit years of age, I thought Mum and Dad didn't love me anymore. And you know, I thought Mum and Dad had abandoned me. Didn't love me anymore. And you know, all my mixed emotions were compounded when after a week sitting in at the hospital, they took me down into the clinic. And they put this white stuff onto my chest and my back, my torso. I don't know if anybody here tonight has ever broken an arm or a leg and had a plaster cast put on. But that's what they were putting onto my chest. And you know, when it hardened, the doctor and nurse came into the room with this electric cutter. Do you know, it's like when you go to the dentist, the drill. Well, this electric cutter was going zzzz. And you know, I was going, "Boys, boys, boys." Friends, tonight, I thought I was going to die there in Edinburgh. And you know, friends, tonight, the person I longed to be there that time was my mum. I wanted my mum there to put her wee arms around me, to give me a wee cuddle, and to say, "Brian, it's okay. I'm here, and I love you." But my mum wasn't there, or my dad's. And you know, they took off that plaster cast off my shoulders. And over the next couple of weeks, the technicians there at the hospital made my first pair of arms. And my dear, we'll go to the next wee picture. There we are. Obviously, that's not me at 2 and a bit. I'm probably about 10, 11 years of age there. But the arms didn't really change over the years. Not very much. And that's basically what the arms looked like. And you know, friends, they're not like your arms. And you know, the first time they were putting these arms, and many times afterwards, when they put those metal contraptions on my shoulders, as a wee boy of 2 and a bit years of age, friends, I kept falling over. And I had to learn to walk again when I had those metal arms on. As you can see there, there's a wee strap across my chest. As I expanded my chest muscles, that made the arms open and close. And then there's wee pressure pads on my left and right shoulders. And as I moved my shoulders up and down, that would cause the arms to go up and down and in and out. And that's how they worked. And they were powered by these wee gas cylinders. Maybe we will just show it and then go back one. We'll just move forward one. There we are. There's a wee gas cylinder there. They powered the arms. And they made quite a hissy noise too, didn't they? Whenever they moved all the time. And they were quite embarrassing when you had them on. But you know, friends, I stayed for 10 weeks on the first occasion. And then one day, Mum and Dad came back. And when I saw my father coming into the room, I was excited. And friends, I ran over and I jumped into his arms. But when I looked at him, nope, nope, nope. Friends, I was cross. Where had my dad been for the last 10 weeks? See, when you're only 2.5 years of age, 10 weeks seemed like eternity. And then my mum would come into the room. And you know, when I saw my mum coming in, she would say to me in later years, she said, "Brian, I couldn't stay in the room. I had to leave the room." And Brian, many tears came trickling down my cheeks. When I saw how miserable you looked with those wee metal contraptions, prosthetics on your wee shoulders. But you know, Mum and Dad that day, friends, said the words I wanted to hear. I longed to hear. They said, "Brian, we'll come to take you home, back to Ballyclare, to Ballylinney." And you know, as a wee boy, I said, "Yes! Yippee! Mum and Dad still love me." And you know, we got back home to Ballylinney, Ballyclare. And I don't know why, friends, here tonight, but boys and girls would come around. And you know, they'd stick their wee fingers in the wee hooks. And you know, their wee fingers were going blue. And their mummies and dad said, "Well, you shouldn't have put your wee fingers in the hooks in the first place." You know, they wanted to see how strong the wee hooks were in the arms. But you know, the professors in Scotland said to my mum and dad, "Try and get Brian to wear those arms for up to 8 hours every day." And I have to be honest here tonight. If I had those arms on for 20 minutes, I thought that was 20 minutes too long. But you know, at the age of 6.5, I have to move on tonight, put down a few stories, but 6.5, my family went for a special holiday. We used to go up to Port Rush for a week or two to a caravan in July. But in 1967, we went to the Isle of Man, to Douglas. And friends, I wasn't to know that that holiday in 1967 had a profound effect upon my parents. Because in the May of 1970, my family would sell up our wee small holding in Ballyclare and we'd move over to Douglas in the Isle of Man. And by that time, I had a younger sister, Gwen. And you know, it was no problem getting Alan or Patricia or Gwen into a wee primary school in Douglas. But you know, Mum and Dad took me along to 3 or 4 wee primary schools in the greater Douglas area. And the head teachers at all the schools said the same thing. "We're sorry. Brian will need special training, special education." And unfortunately, you'll not get that in the Isle of Man. And so it was decided that I'd either have to go over to Liverpool or come back here to Northern Ireland. And so, because I'd already been going to a school here called Fleming Fulton School. Anybody here tonight heard of it? Yeah, a few heads are nodding. Yeah, Fleming Fulton School is up there in Belfast. And way back in 1970, they had 220 children with special needs from all the 6 counties in Northern Ireland, plus one, me, from the Isle of Man. And 40 of the 220 children were boarders, and I'd be one of them. As you can imagine, as a wee lad of 8 going on 9 years of age, I wasn't too happy with Mum and Dad sending me away for 3 months at a time as a boarder. And you know, I thought Mum and Dad were being harsh, sending me away. And you know, I was missing them and missing my siblings. And you know, something else happened when I went to school at Fleming Fulton. No longer, friends, now could I cheat with my metal arms. You see, on the farm, I was only wearing up to 20 minutes a day, max. Now at school, I had to wear them for 8 hours every day. And because I wasn't used to wearing for that many hours a day, my shoulders were coming out in these blisters and wheals and cuts and bruises. And friends, I used to, with those arms, I used to do things I know I shouldn't have done. Do you know the brick walls or anywhere? I used to go up to them and smash them, the arms up against the walls to try to smash them, to break them. I was desperate not to wear the arms. Sometimes people ask me, Brian, were you angry when you were a boy? And I have to be honest here tonight. The answer is yes. Especially when I went home back to the Isle of Man in the summer months. It was okay when I lived in Ballyclare. Boys and girls knew me there since I was a baby. But in the Isle of Man, boys and girls had never met a boy with no arms before. And you know, boys and girls would be cruel. Boys and girls would be laughing at me. They'd be teasing me. They'd be knocking me over and saying not nice things. And they kept saying, Bram, why have you got no arms? And you know, as a wee boy, I find it hard to verbalize, express my feelings and my emotions. And friends, tonight, I used to do things I know I should never have done. As you can see there with the arms, they've got a good right hook on them. And you know, one or two times when the kids would wind me up for the upteenth time, I didn't have them on too often, but one or two times when I had them on, friends, I'd go up to the children and I'd go, boom! And friends, I would nearly knock them out. Wasn't that terrible? And friends, something else I used to do. I used to also give out Glasgow kisses. Some of you here know what I'm talking about. They're headbutts. Do you know, they wouldn't ask me for the 100th time why I had no arms. And saying not nice things. Do you know, I shouldn't have done it. And rightfully, I had to say sorry. Sorry to the child that knocked out or nearly hurt them or whatever. And also to their parents for what I'd done. I shouldn't have done it. But you know, friends, tonight, my lowest point as a boy was in my 10th year. I remember saying, God, if you exist, God, I don't like you. I don't like you, God, because you've made me different from the other children. Why do I have to struggle with these metal arms? And why do these other boys and girls and everybody say not nice things? And you know, tonight, friends, at my lowest point, I actually said, God, I wish. I'd never been born. Never been born. Friends, that was my lowest point in my 10th year. But I know, Keith, tonight you wouldn't want me to stop in a low point. Definitely not. Because, friends, my 13th year, 1974, I call the glorious year in my life. Friends, it'll not be a year like 1974, the day I die. I meet Jesus. Because in that year, friends, 1974, there's two stories I want to quickly mention tonight. They're very important stories. The first one is this. One day, there at Fleming Fulton in Belfast, Fleming Fulton School, the teacher came into the classroom and she said, Brian, I want to have a wee word with you. And friends, I was wrecking my brains. What was she going to say? She said, Brian, the professor's over in Edinburgh. The physiotherapist, the occupational therapist, the carers, assistants, and the teachers. Brian, they've all come to the same decision. Brian, no longer do you have to wear your metal arms. I'm deaf in my left ear. I said, pardon? She said, no longer do you have to wear your arms. Friends, my reaction that day was going, yes! Yippee! No more metal arms. You see, friends, from the age of 2.5 to 13, I kept saying to them all the time, these arms are no good. These here are my toes, my precious toes. They're my hands. And you know, the teacher took those arms off my wee shoulders. She put them in the cupboards. She locked them with the key, and I said, Miss, can I have the key for the cupboards? You see, I thought a couple of months later, everybody would change their minds, and out again would come the old metal arms. Friends, that is 40 years ago. I'm 53 now. 40 years ago since I last seen those metal arms. Isn't that good? Well, I think it is. But you know, something even better happened in my 13th year. Do you know, as a lad at school as a boarder, it was compulsory to go to church or chapel every Sunday morning. And I have to be honest here tonight. I used to often pretend I was sick come Sunday morning. Do you know, I was never sick on Saturday nights because match of the day was on, the football. And you know, the staff at school would suss this out that I seemed to always be sick come Sunday morning. And you know, if you were sick, you had to stay in your bed all day, and I wasn't one for staying in my bed, so I had to go to church. And I have to be honest here, I used to think it was the most boring and longest hour of the week, going to church. But you know, at school as a boarder, I had a good friend called Alan. And you know, Alan was born with cerebral palsy, which meant that Alan's arms would wave about uncontrollably and his legs. And his speech was not always easy to understand, especially when he's all excited. And I used to think Alan was crackers or wired to the moon. Because Alan would not only go to church on Sunday morning, which he had to go, but he would go on Sunday nights. And I said, Alan, you're daft. I'd be in the morning. And that was enough for me. Well, you know, Alan came back from church one Sunday night. And you know what Alan saw me? He said, Brian, guess what happened to me tonight at church? I said, oh, dear, dear, dear. What's he going to say? He said, Brian, I've become a Christian. Jesus has forgiven me for all my sins. See, friends, tonight the Bible says our sins, we're all sinners from conception. Although Alan didn't say that then, but that's what the Bible tells us. And you know, at that time I said, Alan, that's good. You now have Jesus as your friend and your Savior who's forgiven you of all the wrong things you've done. I said, Alan, that's good for you. But Alan, don't you preach to me about your gods. You see, friends, I was still angry with God. But you know, friends, tonight you can say you're a Christian. But what difference has it made in your life? Well, you know, I was watching Alan in the days and the weeks after he became a Christian. And you know, one of the changes in Alan was that Alan would pray for each one of the 40 boarders by name. And sometimes I'd go past his room and I'd hear him mention each one of us by name. And when I heard him mention my name, friends, I used to boil up inside. I used to say, Alan, stop you praying for me. I'm just testing your floor here. I said, Alan, I don't need your gods. See, friends, I was a hard nut. And I didn't think God was going to get me. But you know, Alan kept praying that God would melt my heart. That God would change me. And you know, friends, about 7-8 months later, after Alan became a Christian, I remember one night about 10 o'clock at night, I was sitting beside my bed, chatting to Alan. And I said to Alan, Alan, I'll never be good enough. Never be good enough, Alan, to get into God's heaven. And friends, Alan said to me, Brian, you've got it in one. You'll never be good enough. You see, friends, there in the New Testament, in the Bible, in the book of Romans, chapter 3 and verse 23, it says that we've all sinned and we've all fallen short of God's righteousness or His standards. Friends, not one of us here tonight, by good works and deeds alone, can get into God's heaven. And you know, most of us here, especially the older folks in here tonight, are familiar with Frank Sinatra. Remember, he used to have that song, My Way? Friends, in the Bible, God says there's only one way to get to heaven. And that is through the Lord Jesus Christ. And you know, Alan quoted that wee verse there in John's Gospel, chapter 14 and verse 6, where Jesus says, I am. I am means the all-sufficient one. That's Jesus. I am the way, the truth, and the life. No one can have a relationship with God except through me. That is Jesus. And you know, I remember 10 o'clock at night, Alan sharing that with me. And he said, Brian, it's only by believing and trusting that what Jesus did on that cross 2,000 years ago, when he shed his precious blood, took my sin, my punishment, that each one of us here tonight should be taking ourselves. He had taken it all upon himself. And you know, Alan said, you have to believe. And I also said, Brian, you have to have a changing. In the New Testament, it uses that word repentance. Repent, friends, means a turning around 180 degrees. A changing in our minds. You see, friends, the devil wants to hold on to our minds. A changing in our hearts. A changing in all of us. Surrendering to him. And you know, friends, that night, when I saw the joy and the peace my friend Alan had, friends, I wanted that for myself. I was desperate. And I remember that night I sat beside my bed. And I said, Lord, forgive me. For those kids that knocked out with the metal arms. The Glasgow kisses. The times I've cursed you and blasphemed you, Lord. And done my own thing. And you know that night I said, Lord, would you forgive me? Would you accept me? And friends, that night, God turned me around. He forgave me. And you know, I asked him to give me a fresh start. You know, and the Bible says we become a new creature, new child in Christ. And you know, that night, I knew that I was forgiven. And you know, Alan said, Brian, in the days to come, you have to tell others what Jesus has done for you. And you know, I have to be honest here tonight. I maybe nearly knocked one or two kids out after I became a Christian. Do you know, as only as I went along to a wee Tuesday night fellowship group, that I learned to learn stories about Jesus and how I had to love people now and not knock them out anymore. And you know, we used to sing a wee chorus back in the mid-70s. And I'm sure some of you will know it. That wee chorus, because he lives. Because Jesus lives, I can face tomorrow. Do you know, through my teenage years, it wasn't easy. But you know, Jesus was with me. Do you know, at the age of 13, my reading ability was that of a six-year-old. I could only read words that a six-year-old could read when I was 13. And yet, by the time I was 17, I left school with 7 O-levels. Today, you call them GCSEs. And you know, when I was at school, no teachers had any hope and guilty in me passing any exams. And I know there's quite a few young ones in here tonight. I'm not saying become a Christian and then you pass all your exams. Unfortunately, it doesn't work like that. But you know, friends, tonight I believe that Jesus helped me, friends. He helped me to focus and to get down to my studying and helped me to concentrate and to get through my exams. And you know, at 17, I headed off to college over in England. And friends, I was only at college 2 months. Went up the driveway. Thank you, May. And one more. There we are. There's a motor car. Friends, I learned to drive a car when I was 17. 36 years ago. Friends, you don't need to have arms to drive a car. Isn't that great? And you know, friends, I had 12 one-hour lessons. And I passed first time. Isn't that good? Friends, as a wee boy, I was never allowed to say the word can't. But try, try, try. Look to your potential and not your limitations. Especially now that I had Jesus in my heart. And you see the words we've got up there, friends, tonight. It says, get ready to pray. And if there's anybody in our gallery here tonight, here in Hamilton Road, and you have maybe never prayed before, or you're struggling in your prayer life, friends, tonight, I can get you praying. What you do is you come for a wee spin in my car. I'll get you praying. If he said, Lord, that man's crazy. You see, friends, when I drive my car, you see the steering wheel? The wheel goes around on its own. Isn't that amazing? I don't touch the steering wheel. You see, there's a wee dinner plate, like a disc on the floor, like my left foot, with a wee strap. And as I turn that around on the floor, the steering wheel goes around. And it's an automatic car, and there's a wee box of tricks there on the right side. So it's very similar to your remote control that you'd have for your television and the infrared receiver. And there's 12 buttons in that, and with my toes, I can press all those buttons. And I know where they all are. And it does the lights and the wipers and the indicators and the washers and the ironing and the washing. May say as I wish. But isn't it great, friends, to be able to have mobility? Getting out and about for the last 36 years. Friends, this next story is important. Do you know from the age of 17 to 23, those 6 years, I call them the barren years in my walk with God. Some people would call that being a backslider. You see, friends, what happened, friends, was that from between 17 and 23, when I was at college over in England, I stopped going to church. I stopped being with other Christians. I stopped reading my Bible. I stopped praying. And you know, it was also a time in my life at the age of 18 when I received compensation for my disability as a thalidomider. Being a thalidomider. And friends, I received this lump sum of money. And you know, when I was at college, I was doing a business course. And I was learning all about stocks and shares. And you know, as a lad of 18, you know, I thought by the time I was 25, I'd be a millionaire. I'd be rich. And friends, I was doing a bit of wheeling and dealing in stocks and shares. And friends, I lost a few shirts. We all know what that means. I lost quite a bit of money. But you know, friends, the most important thing I lost from the age of 17 to 23 was my joy and my peace with God. You see, the fruit of the Spirit there in Galatians 5, 22 and 23 talks about love, joy, peace, kindness, gentleness, faithfulness, patience, goodness, self-control, and one or two others, faithfulness. I mean, I've already said that one. But you know, all those fruits of the Spirit. And you know, from those 5, 6 years, there was very little evidence of that in my life, the fruit of the Spirit. You'll know them by their fruits. And you know, friends, I was far from God. I took my eye off Jesus. But you know, friends, I want to encourage you here tonight that we have a God of second chances. Do you hear that? We have a God of second chance. Not just second chance, but 1,000 second chances. Friends, you might be here tonight and you're blown it with God. But you know, we've got a great God. And you know, the Lord used an evangelist called Willie Stewart from Glasgow who came over to the Isle of Man. And you know, in 1984, around that Easter time, Willie Stewart was over for 2 weeks doing a wee mission. And you know, when he was going round knocking on the doors, friends, I answered the door there in Douglas, in the Isle of Man. And you know, Willie Stewart was chatting to me for 5 minutes or so, and he said to me, Brian, have you got a Bible in the house? I said, I have. But I had to be honest, I hadn't looked at it for many years. And you know, he said to me, Brian, will you promise you'll open it and read it? And you know, I kept my promise. I didn't read it that day or the next day, but about 4 days later, I sensed God was speaking into my heart and said, Brian, you promised that man you'd read your Bible again. And friends, I opened up the Bible and I was reading there in the book of Joshua about a man called Caleb in the 14th chapter. And you know, I was reading that passage. It's a passage that talks a lot. In the 14th chapter of Joshua, it talks about Caleb, and he says to the Lord, Lord, give me that mountain, Mount Hebron, where the Anakites are, the giants. And Caleb says to the Lord, Lord, you and I together, we can knock out all those giants. But in that passage, friends, there's one word hit me three times in between the eye. And you know what that word was, friends? The word wholeheartedness. Wholeheartedness. And friends, for the last 6-7 years, I haven't even been quarter-hearted for God's. And friends, that night, I cried out to God again. I said, God, you know I've blown it. I've let you down. I've been ashamed of you. And you know, that night, I cried out and said, God, forgive me again. And I asked, Lord, would you give me a wee bit of that courage and boldness of Caleb? Because, friends, would you believe it tonight if I said to you all that I'm by nature a shy person? I am. And you know, I also asked the Lord to give me back my joy, to give me back my peace. And you know, that was the 30th of April, 1984, 31 years ago. And you know, the following Sunday night, I went along to a wee Baptist church, Broadway Baptist Church there in Douglas. And you know, at that time, on a Sunday night, there's probably a good 150 people here tonight. At that time, there was only about a dozen people in the church that Sunday night. And friends, when I went into the church, all I could hear was a drip, 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 drip. Because the rain was coming in through the roof into all these buckets in the pews. But you know, at the end of the service, one of the ladies came up to me. She put her arms around me, friends. And she nearly suffocated me. Friends, my mum accepted me and my dad in the early days of my life. God accepted me when I was 13. And here, in 1984, at 23 years of age, this wee church, the people there accepted me and loved me. Isn't that good? And you know, over the coming weeks and months, the fellowship there encouraged me, nurtured me. And you know, when I was 26, the Lord put it in my heart to go to Bible college. And yet, you know, friends, I had all these anxieties about going to Bible college. What about all the practical things about getting my shirt tucked in, my hair washed, doing these 2,000-word essays every 10 days or so? Because I was writing with a big toe. Computers were only in infancy back then. But you know, I had all these worries. And you know, the devil was whispering into my ear and saying, Brian Galt, you're no good. You'll not be able to go to college, Bible college. But you know, the Lord gave me a wee promise, friends, in the Old Testament, in the book of Isaiah, chapter 58, verse 10 and 11. In that passage, just to paraphrase, it says, if you give yourself to the needy and the poor and the oppressed, then I will satisfy all your needs. Not all your wants, friend, but your needs. And friends, I said, right, off I go, off to college. And friends, I was only at college about two weeks. I used to worry about getting my washing in Ireland doing. And you know, 5 different girls came to me and said, Brian, we'll do your washing in Ireland for you. Isn't that good? Friends, I got them onto a rota system. Friends, I didn't want to lose them. And you know, friends, 5 girls came, they didn't all come together, they came differently. And you know, I thought it was amazing because I was asking the Lord for one and he sent me 5. And you know, every week, you see, each term was 5 weeks and then you had a weekend off or a week off and then you had another 5 weeks or 10-week terms. And so they only had to do it once every half term. And you know, I had a basket about this high here with all my washing. And you know, I have a wee confession here tonight. Do you know, as the weeks went on, that basket was getting higher and higher and higher. Because other lads were giving me their washing too. And you know, I used to worry as a wee lad, you know, there when I was at college, I used to worry about getting my shirt tucked in. You see, there's one thing I haven't been able to do in 53 years, is get my foot up such a way to tuck my shirt in. And I used to worry about getting my shirt tucked in. And you know, way back in the late 80s, it was a fashion to have your shirt hanging out. And the Lord, you said to me, Brian, what are you worrying about? About getting your shirt tucked in when everybody else has got theirs hanging out. What are you worrying about? And you know, I used to worry about getting my hair washed. I had a wee bit of hair back then than what I've got today. And you know, some of the lads on campus used to say, Galty, just you stick your head into the sink for 2 minutes and we'll give it a good old washing. You see, God was bringing people into my life to be a help. And you know, I had to allow people to come into my space to support me and encourage me and help me in practical ways. But you know, God was saying, friends, right through that time at college, Brian, I love you. And Brian, I know all about you. And I'll take care of you. And friends, just as God was taking care of me back then, and he does today in 2015, friends, he is the same Jesus. And he's saying that to each one of us here tonight, here in Hamilton Roads. Friends, I don't know you, but you know, I know one in Jesus. He knows all about you. He knows what you're going through, your struggles. And he says, trust me. Trust me. There's a wee verse there in 1 Peter 5:7. It says, cast all, not just some, but all your cares upon him, because he careth for you. Friends, he loves you. And he wants to be a part of every part of your life. And he's a faithful God. I can testify to his goodness. And we're just going to quickly move on. The next wee picture, may I please? There we are. Look at that. Isn't that lovely? Friends, I used to wonder. There's a lot of young ones in here tonight. Do you know, I used to wonder, would I ever get married? Do you know, I'd fallen in love in my late teens. And then into my early 20s. And also my early 30s. With different ladies at different times. And you know, each time, God would say to me, Brian, that's not the girl for you. And you know, I was hurt. I felt rejected. And I said to myself, do I want to be vulnerable again? And then in 1997, 18 years ago, May came over to work in the bank in the Isle of Man. And at that time, friends, I was working with two other colleagues in that wee Baptist church in Douglas. And my two colleagues, I used to do quite a wee bit of the pastoral visiting. Do we all know what pastoral visiting is? When the minister comes around, or somebody from the church comes around for a wee cup of tea or a wee scone or something, a wee cake. Well, do you know, I went round to May's wee house. And you know, friends, May got out the coffee and the Kit Kats. And you know, my wee heart was going bubbly, bubbly, bump. I hope all our hearts tonight are going bubbly, bump. I said, Lord, this is a lovely girl. But friends, I was shy. Would you believe that, Keith? No, I was shy. And you know, people often say to me, Brian, have you got any regrets in life? And you know, this is one of them. I'd wish I had the courage that day. Well, maybe not that day, but no, soon afterwards to say something to May. Do you know, I said nothing to May for the next 18 months. And then May, I heard in the grapevine that she was being transferred back to Northern Ireland with the bank. So friends, what do I do? You can imagine I and the good Lord had a few wee chats about our wee May. And you know, one day the Lord said to me, he said, Brian, less talking and a bit more walking. Get yourself over to Northern Ireland. And you know, there's a wee bit of water from the Isle of Man to Belfast. It's about 70 miles of the Irish Sea. And so I got in the boat on the car, at the car, and lovely flowers in the back seat of the car. And May was living in a wee village outside of Ballymena called Kells. And friends, I was actually doing a wee meeting here in Belfast, or just up the road here in Belfast. And I took that wee diversion that you do, going from Belfast up to Ballymena, up to Kells. And you know, I went up to see May. And you know, when I saw May that time again, after 18 months, May had the coffee, friends, and the Kit Kats. Friends, you can have Kit Kats once with a girl, but Kit Kats twice. I said, Lord, that's a sign. That's good enough for me, Lord. And friends, not that night, but 3 or 4 occasions later, I had the courage. And I said, May, What's in your hearts? What did you say to me, May?
I said, what's in yours?
What's in mine? I said, May, I'm falling in love with you. And what did you say to me, May?
I said, me too.
Pardon?
Me too.
Me too. Fred, I had to hear it again. You know, I'm all deaf in that left ear of mine. Me too. Friends, I had to wait till I was 38 years of age. 38. And I know there's quite a lot of young ones in here tonight. All in their late teens and early 20s. And they're all saying, Bran, that's ages. 38. But you know, God has His bestest for you and for me. But He says, trust me. Trust me. Because I love you. And I have the bestest for you. There may be some here tonight. God has given you the gift of singleness. And I believe that can be a gift from God. But friends, for the plans that God was preparing before, after we got married, I didn't know then the amount of traveling that we'd be doing all over the world. Do you know, over the years, May and I have had the privilege and joy to go to about 25, 26 countries around the world, as far as Japan and Australia. We're in Australia last year, and God willing, DV, we're going back this September for 6 weeks to do meetings. Isn't it amazing? And to North America, and 6 times to Brazil. Isn't it amazing? And friends, God knew that I would need a helpmate, a companion, and also a wee shirt tucker in her for all our travels. But you know, friends, away back in 1993, I saw a TV program about Brazil. And as I saw a TV program about Brazil in 1993, tears came down my cheeks. I thought us men here tonight, we're not supposed to cry. Do you know, we've got God's heart, especially when you read the Psalms. If you've got God's compassion, especially friends, even today, yesterday when we hear about Nepal, Bangladesh, Tibet, and the tragedy, the sadness of what's happened there at the moment. Friends, of all of us should have God's compassion to reach out for those nations at this time. But you know, way back in 1993, I saw this program about Brazil. And sadly in Brazil today, friends, they use the drug thalidomide for people suffering with leprosy. My mother took it for morning sickness. In Brazil, there are 30,000 new cases of leprosy every year. And the reporter was showing pictures of boys and girls without arms and legs, just like me. And you know, when I watched that, I cried out. I said, God, how can this be, Lord? Have we not learned from the 1960s when I was born? And you know, friends, not that day, but you know, a few days later, the Lord spoke into my spirit and said, Brian, I want you to write a book. Friends, I'd never written a book before. I was struggling writing 2,000 words. But friends, I asked my two colleagues in the church if I could have 3 months on paid leave. And friends, for the next 8.5, 9 months, I typed this book with my toes on the computer, on the laptop, with my two big toes. I typed 105,000 words. And I sent the manuscript off to all these Christian publishing houses down in London. And you know, they all send me back the manuscript saying, Brian, we don't know where the Isle of Man is. Never mind Brian Gulch. Friends, was that encouraging? Friends, I was knocked down, but not knocked out. Perplexed, confused. Friends, we read about that there in 2 Corinthians chapter 4. But in that passage it says, do not lose hearts. And if you missed it the first time, further down the passage, it says it again. Do not lose hearts. Do not give up. Press on. And friends, I had to wait until February 2000 when my life story, Look No Hands, was published. May, how much patience have I got?
Very little.
Very little. But you know, God's plans. God knew that I had to wait till the year 2000. Yes, we got married in the February, or in the August, and my book came out in the February of 2000. And tonight, friends, I just thank the Lord that my story is now into its 18th reprint. Isn't that amazing? If somebody had said to me back then, 15 years ago, your book would sell out 18 times, I wouldn't believe it. Over 33,000 copies have been sold. And all the royalties and the profits from my story all go to help children out in Brazil. And we're now helping children and adults in Africa too. Not because of the Thalidomide, but we're helping children and adults there too. And we've got copies here, haven't we, mate, tonight? And if anybody would love a wee copy here tonight, we've got them out on the tables. And we now live in a wee village called Brashean, which is about 3 miles outside of Ballymena. And we came back in the year 2006. And now that I'm back 8 years, I'm kind of getting used to Ballymena, where when you go in to do a wee bit of shopping, you always ask for a wee bit of discounts. I don't know whether you can do that here in Bangor. But friends, tonight, I want to give you a wee bit of discounts if you get some books. Because friends, the books are normally £9 each. And if you take one home tonight, it's still £9. But here, listen to this. This is a good bit. Do you know, if you take a second one, you get the second one for £1. 2 for £1. Isn't that good? Because friends, my desire tonight is that you don't just take one for yourself, but get one for a friend. Have you all got friends here tonight? Only Keith? I hope you've all got friends. And afterwards, I've already put blessings in all the books. And I'll be happy to put a wee name or two in the books when we're having coffee later on. And did you say there's some nice rolls or some sausage rolls or some hot rolls?
Hot dogs.
Hot dogs. Oh, hot dogs, right. So you get your hot dogs, you get a couple of books at the same time. And May, what do we accept, May? May's the banker. What do we accept?
Cash.
But having said that, if you've come tonight and you've brought no money with you, don't worry. Still take the books home with you. But what we'll do is we'll get the heavies up. I'm sorry. Well, if you just give your name and then maybe Keith or the pastors later on, at a later date, we can get the money. So what I want tonight, I want you to take the books and I want you to bless others. Something else I brought tonight with me is a wee DVD, 60 Minutes of My Testimony. And these came out about 3.5 years ago. And we have been amazed at how God has used it. Over 47,000 of these are out and about now. And tonight, we've got 300, haven't we, May? And how much are these, May?
Free!
So friends, tonight, there's 300 here tonight. And I'm not taking any of them back home up to Brashean. And I want you, there's about 150, 120, 40, 50 people here tonight. So you all could take at least 2 home each. And if there's any left, I'll give them to Keith and he can get them circulated around. Is that okay? So that's the wee DVD. But we're going to just wrap up at a wee minute or two. We'll just whiz through a couple of pictures. These are some of the 146 families that were helped in Brazil. We're not going to go through all 146 tonight. But we'll just show a couple of them. There's Miriam. And her mummy took the little mite for leprosy. And she was born with no hands. And we were able to purchase, because of the gifts people have given and also sales of books, we were able to get her a little scooter. Next one, Jonathan. And just like myself, there in Brazil, in São Paulo, he's got no arms. Thank you, Mayor. Whistle through them. Thank you, dear. And there, as I type with my 2 big toes, he can type with 5 toes. And that was about 8 years ago. And the next one, there's Mary Therese. Not too easy to see, but she's got no legs below the knee. And we were able, she already had a computer, so we paid for her to go to college. Because she was a bright girl and she wanted to go into business and finance. So we paid for her to go to college. And there's Franciella. Very typical thalidomide disability. We short arms and feet at the hips. I often say to people, how desperate are you to be able to walk? Because Franciella and her mummy came 12 hours in a bus to São Paulo to pick up her electric wheelchair. And then another 12 hours to go back home again. Isn't that brilliant? And the next one, May. Moses, about 18 months old there. Our key lady in Brazil is called Claudia Maximino. She's the president of the Thalidomide Society in Brazil. And Claudia said, Brian, could we buy Moses' family a wee house? Well, I don't think here in Bangor you could buy a house for £900, could you? But there in Recife, in the coast there in Brazil, Mary, thank you, dear. There's a family. And the next one, there's their wee house. Okay, it's not in keeping with your house. But for where they lived, do you know, their family were just amazed that we would come all the way from the Isle of Man to Brazil to help their family. And the next one, may please. There's Johnny Erickson Taddy. Many of you here tonight have heard of Johnny, maybe read some of her books. Well, Johnny has been a great inspiration to me over the years. And we also work in partnership with Wheels for the World. And over the last 4 years, we've been able to raise funds for 405 wheelchairs that have been sent out to five African and East European countries. We'll just whiz through these, mate. Okay, we'll just whiz through. Haven't got time. Okay, whiz. We'll go to the last one. Yeah, there we are. We're going to wrap up in 2 minutes here. There we are. Psalm 139, verse 14. It says there, I praise you because I am fearfully and wonderfully made. And why I asked Keith to read that for me tonight, that passage, was because, friends, it talks a lot about God's presence. And friends, for the first 13 years of my life, I thought I could run away from God. Friends, tonight I am so glad that God caught up with me. Caught up with me. I'm so glad that my friend Alan, way back when I was 13 years of age, told me the bestest news I ever needed to hear was that God loved me. That Jesus died on that cross for my sins. Friends, the 13th verse, I know it's not up there, but the 13th verse says that God knit me together in my mother's womb. Friends, God didn't drop any stitches. He didn't make any mistakes. God knew when I was in the womb 53 years ago that I would have no arms. Yes, that company in Germany that manufactured thalidomide were greedy. They took shortcuts. But friends, God knew that I would have no arms. And friends, God has turned it around. Many of you are familiar with Genesis 50, verse 20, where Joseph talks to his brothers and said, brothers, you intended to harm me, but God intended it for good. Friends, God has turned it around. And you know, God melted my heart 40 years ago. He gave me a purpose where before I had none. And you know, friends, tonight, in closing, I can say to each one of you here tonight that I am complete. I'm complete. I'm not perfect, am I, mate? Nope. Friends, I'm not perfect. Not one of us here tonight will be perfect this side of heaven. Yes, we're to be sanctified people. We're to become more and more Christ-like, be more like Jesus. But you know, only when we see Jesus face to face will we be perfect. But friends, I am complete. Complete in Him. In Jesus. Friends, I would prefer to have no arms and have Jesus in my heart than have my arms and not have Jesus. And you know, my challenge to each one of you in closing tonight, can you say in your hearts that you are complete in Jesus? Do you know Him? Have you come to that place that I had to do 40 years ago and say, God, I'm a wretched sinner. Lord, come into my life.